Western Kentucky became the site of a media sensation in 1925 when a man named Floyd Collins ended up trapped 200 feet underground. A revised third edition of a book called Trapped, The Story of Floyd Collins, is being released this month in honor of the 100th anniversary of the disaster. And a musical called Floyd Collins opens on Broadway this month, too. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Roger Brucker is a cave explorer and co-author of the book Trapped, The Story of Floyd Collins. He's the co-founder of the Cave Research Foundation, which found a connection between Mammoth Cave and the Flint Ridge Cave System, making Mammoth the world's longest cave. He joins me in this recorded interview. Thank you so much for being here, Roger.
I'm happy to be here.
Tell us briefly the story of Floyd Collins. Who was he and what happened to him 100 years ago?
The story is 100 years ago, Floyd Collins was a farmer and a cave explorer. He was a professional cave explorer because he had discovered Crystal Cave in 1917, and he had discovered another cave in 1910. But these caves didn't do so well, so he was trying to find a cave that was closer to town. So he made a deal with three farmers. At any rate, he found a cave. He went in the cave. He spent 2 weeks working to enlarge the cave. And then suddenly he became stuck.
How did he get stuck?
Well, he had crawled into a place that was very tiny. He set off some dynamite to enlarge that place. He waited a couple of days, and then he went in again, and he went through this place that he had blasted. He found himself in a pit. He looked around, and suddenly his light began to flicker, and he said, "Oh, I forgot to put kerosene in the lantern." So he was on his way out, on his back, pushing through a body-size hole, when all of a sudden a rock dropped on his left ankle, pinning it in a V-shaped groove. Well, he couldn't reach down for it. He could only shake his foot, and the more he shook, the more rocks fell in on it, and suddenly he was totally trapped in this body-shaped tube.
That sounds terrifying, and it's got to be about as dark as it can possibly get in that space.
It's not only dark, but it's kind of cold sometimes. When we went in to examine the cave, it was in February when Floyd had been trapped in February. So a cold wind whistling through the cave makes it even more uncomfortable. And only one farmer knew where he was because he had been staying there. Then followed the nightmare of trying to free him. And various people tried, including his brother and other friends. And this went on, and people said, "Well, we're going to get him soon." Meanwhile, the press responded, and from Louisville and all over, actually. The question was, when will they get him out? Will they get him out? What's keeping them? And so the suspense began to build, and finally it was in every newspaper that subscribed to the AP, the Associated Press.
Wow. And how did they know he was trapped? Because this one farmer knew he was kind of missing, that he didn't come back on time?
That's correct. He was gone for a day and a half, and they said, "Where is Floyd? We know he's went in the cave, but did he come out?" So they sent their son in to find him. His son was afraid to go in, but so he yelled, and he said, "Floyd, Floyd, can you hear me?" And Floyd said, "Yes, I'm stuck, I'm trapped. Go over to the home place and bring back my folks and some tools."
There was an attempt to rescue him. Why was it so tough to get him out of there?
The place was very, very small. If you can visualize a knee-hole desk, the cave is about that big. as the hole in the knee hole desk. Very tiny cave. Furthermore, the cave is very scary. In fact, it's the most scary cave I've ever been in, because rocks drop out of the ceiling on you, and it's kind of dangerous. So there were very few people who were small enough to fit through this cave. Many people tried, and some people said, well, I took food to him. Oh, did you really? And said, oh, sure. Yes, he's doing fine. And they would discover that the food was on a ledge shortly after the entrance.
Tell us more about this cave. You mentioned that it's the scariest one you've been in. There aren't too many people who've been in this cave. What's it like to be inside that space where Floyd Collins was?
The experience of being in this cave is, first of all, you come down and there's a shelter, and a shelter is an overhanging ledge, and you walk under the ledge and you see at the back end of the ledge near the wall a rectangle, a gate, and this gate leads downward through a short tube 3 feet into a room about as big as a grand piano, and the grand piano 3 feet high, if you can imagine that. You can't stand up anywhere in the cave. You move to the end of this grand piano-shaped room, and there we discovered a blockage. And we had a map of the cave, so we knew generally what to expect. So we dug our way through the blockage, and then we got into a crawlway. The crawlway is a body-shaped crawl. You're on your belly, squirming along in liquid mud. It is most unpleasant. And as I said, rocks keep dropping on your back, and you say, I don't know whether this is safe or not. Well, after about 45 feet of crawling, you end up in a tiny room about as big as the inside of a pup tent. There, you're faced with a direction change of the cave in which it doubles back on itself and heads downward at a steep angle of 15 or 20 degrees, perhaps. You have to decide whether to go down head first or feet first. You go down about 15 feet, and then you're standing in a tiny room, and the tiny room was where Floyd Collins was trapped. His head was sticking out of the crawlway, but you couldn't see any more of him than his head.
You said early in our discussion that this was the scariest cave you've ever been in. You've been in a lot of caves.
Well, I've been exploring for about 70 years, and I started when I was about 5 years old and going into caves in Put-in Bay in Lake Erie. When I was six, I was taken on the all-day trip in Mammoth Cave. That was the beginning of it, and I've been at it for 70 or more years.
Do you think it'd be possible to rescue him today?
Probably it would. One of the legacies of his being trapped and his death is that cave rescue began to be taken seriously, and all cavers today are served by rescue groups which exist in every cave area. And they have supplies to carry people and to move them over difficult terrain. These people who do this kind of cave rescue practice regularly.
Well, I think I've heard you say there are more women involved in cave rescues these days, too, so there who are naturally a little bit smaller who might have been able to get in there more easily.
Small women are the key to rescue today. Women have more endurance than men, generally, and it's one of the reasons why women are involved in cave exploring, because they can go long distances. Some caves are very lengthy, such as Mammoth Cave. So had women been cave explorers back in 1925, I think we might have gotten Floyd Collins out.
We're talking in this recorded interview about Mammoth Cave and a disaster that happened 100 years ago when a man named Floyd Collins was trapped 200 feet underground. This is a man, Floyd Collins, who died 100 years ago. What do you think made his story such a media sensation at the time?
Ordinarily, we wouldn't know anything about Floyd Collins, just as many miners are trapped in mines, and we don't know who they are. They're anonymous people. Floyd started out as an anonymous farmer and cave explorer until a cub reporter from the Louisville Courier-Journal named Skeets Miller was assigned and went by train down to Cave City and went out to the Sand Cave, and there he saw Homer Collins, who had just come out of the cave after trying to rescue his brother.
So Homer Collins, Floyd Collins' brother.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Skeets Miller, he was called Skeets Miller because he was small as a mosquito. At any rate, he said, how is your brother? Is he dead? And Homer Collins said, well, why don't you go find out for yourself? So he did. He said, well, wait a minute, you better have a flashlight. So Homer Collins gave him a flashlight and sent him in. Well, he was not dressed for it. He was in an overcoat, and he took the overcoat off and plunged into the cave. Well, he must have been as frightened as everybody else who ever tried to get in the cave. He crawled in the cave, and he yelled, and he thought he heard Floyd. Finally, he goes down this chute at near the end of the cave, head first, and he collides with Floyd Collins, and Floyd Collins groans, oh, you're hurting me. And this is the beginning of the first interview. Skeets Miller was a reporter who had been reporting emergencies, car wrecks and things like that. He knew that he was not supposed to describe his own emotions, but he was one of the most empathic people I have ever met. And he not only interviewed Floyd, but he was able to describe Floyd's emotions and feelings and fears and hopes. And then he supplied his own fears and hopes and emotions, which a reporter's never supposed to do. That act of reporting propelled Floyd Collins from a nameless, anonymous person to become a real live person that people could visualize. They knew his name. They knew what he felt. They prayed for him. They wondered how he was coming. Why couldn't they get him out? What's wrong? Floyd is stuck. You've got to get him. At any rate, this reporting by Skeets Miller made the difference between the anonymous victim of a disaster to somebody we know the name, we know who he is, we know he's in desperate shape. Will they get him out? And the suspense built and built and built. Part of the reason it built was that the Associated Press was in full blast, and many, many newspapers around the country subscribed to the AP. Secondly, the AP wire photo had just come online, and so photographs began to appear from Sand Cave in every newspaper. And within a day or two, this story was front page in almost every newspaper in the United States. I might also add that this was a time when hardly anything else was going on in this country. It was between World War I and World War II. Calvin Coolidge was in the White House, and he was one of the most bland and colorless people. To fill the front pages, Floyd Collins will do. You have big headlines, stud horse headlines.
Well, I want to circle back to Floyd Collins. There's now a musical about his experience. The musical's been around for a while, but it's now on Broadway for the first time. Did you ever imagine that this story that you know so well could be turned into a musical?
No, I didn't. I had rewritten the story several times for different books. And then one day I got a call after our book had appeared from Tina Landau, and she said, I'm a director of a musical about Floyd Collins. And I said, a musical about Floyd Collins? How can that be? Musicals are supposed to be happy, and this is one of the saddest stories I know about. She said, well, we think we may have a way to get around that. And I said, well, you have to change the ending as far as I can see. She said, no, we're not going to do that, but we have a way to get around it. So they did.
Yeah.
At any rate, it turns out to be a cult musical, and a cult in that the music is very catchy and the story carries some of the same intrigue and attraction that it did when it first unfurled.
I've read interviews with you where you've said part of the reason you got interested in Floyd Collins and got involved with the book is because there was so much information published in 1925 that just wasn't true. Like you were just talking about, somebody said, oh, I brought him food and all that kind of stuff. Do you think there's a larger lesson here about how tragedies get reported, either how they got reported back then or how they got reported today, just how the media works?
If you have a set of editors all around the country calling up their reporters saying, what's going on? For God's sake, tell us what's going on. And you don't know anything. This is very difficult. What happens is that reporters will scare up other stories. One of them said, here's a dog. This must be Floyd Collins' dog. And somebody who knew said, well, that's not Floyd Collins' dog. And the reporter says, it is now.
Oh, gosh.
One of the things that occurred was somebody reported from Haddam, Kansas, that I'm Floyd Collins and I'm free. I got out of the cave. And they said, what are you doing in Haddam, Kansas? He said, well, that's just where I am. And, well, this was a hoax. And on, people really invented stories that were not true.
Well, Mammoth Cave has become such a huge tourist destination. What, if any, role do you think Floyd Collins played in Mammoth Cave becoming what it is today?
At the time, Floyd Collins was trying to run his own cave, which he had discovered in 1916-17. There were probably a dozen caves beyond Mammoth Cave, each one trying to eke out a living by putting signs up on the road, by having cappers, as they were called, who would stand in the road and stop traffic and put their foot up on the running board and say, you folks going to Mammoth Cave? And people would say, yes. Well, you might want to know that it's closed for repairs. You could go to Crystal Cave, which is much more beautiful than Mammoth Cave. Mammoth Cave is covered with soot, and in other words, the salesman would try his best to sell a ticket to a rival cave. This became known as the Cave Wars because sometimes people were violent in the course of pursuing this commercial operation of many different rival caves. Nevertheless, Mammoth Cave was huge and had been operating since 1838, essentially, and so its fame carried it along. Another entrepreneur came along and discovered that Mammoth Cave didn't own all of the ridge in which it was, and so he found more of Mammoth Cave, which was not owned by Mammoth Cave. So he called it the new entrance to Mammoth Cave, and he siphoned off about 20% of its business, maybe 30%. He was a real entrepreneur. This is what Floyd Collins saw and said, well, I can get closer to town than this guy. And that's what he did. So he was engaging in the cave wars. And the cave wars siphoned off a lot of business from Mammoth Cave. Now, what did it do to promote Mammoth Cave? Well, the people of Kentucky said, you know, this, we ought to have a national park there rather than have all this cave war going on. This is, it's not right to have everybody get cheated by everybody who wants to open up a hole in the ground. It became a national park after a lot of money raising and buying of land and finally putting together enough acreage to make a national park. Since it's a national park, its fame has continued to grow, and it has become a tourist attraction of the first rate.
Yeah. What do you think people today can learn from the story of Floyd Collins?
I think people can learn something about the fact that not everything is programmable. We think of life as being programmed. However, there are some people who don't have programmed lives. They have exciting, thrilling lives with wonderful things happening and so on. Well, beyond wonderful things, there are some tragic things that happen to people. People get washed away in floods, as they have been doing the past few days. People are on airplanes that crash, and hundreds of people die. People are washed out to sea. All of these are unexpected and unwelcome events. So I think what we learn from Floyd Collins is that here is a man so close to being rescued that people can talk to him. They can bring him food. Why can't they get him out? Why can't they move the rocks that pin him? What holds him beyond a rock? Is he crippled? No. Well, we're getting closer every minute. We'll keep you informed. In other words, part of the media circus is to keep you grasping for news about this person. Intrigues you.
Well, I've been talking with Roger Brucker, a cave explorer and co-author of the book Trapped, the Story of Floyd Collins. He'll be at Joseph Beth Booksellers in Cincinnati on May 3rd, and you can find details on our website, wvxu.org. Roger, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. And Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.